What is up? Welcome to the Awesome Dad Show. I'm your host, Mark Savant, and today I am joined by Jeremy Roadruck. Jeremy was actually recommended to me by another Act Dad family member who listened to Jeremy's podcast. Jeremy is an author, he has a podcast, he's on basically every social media channel, and he brings a lot of very practical, insightful, and deep thought into the process of parenting. One of the biggest challenges I think we have as parents is communicating with our kids, because kids communicate much differently than adults. And a lot of parents I see try implementing the adult style communication with their kids and it just doesn't work. So Jeremy is gonna come in here and drop a lot of knowledge bombs on you. Get ready, you might wanna have a notepad out, or at least just be ready to listen and absorb some of this really thoughtful stuff that he's bringing to the table. He puts a huge emphasis on martial arts and communication tactics to help improve the confidence of children. I was fascinated, and I think that you're gonna walk away with this being able to communicate just a little bit better with your kids, maybe even greatly with your kids. So I definitely am looking forward to hearing your feedback. If you enjoy the episode, feel free to subscribe to the podcast. There's a fresh episode with an awesome guest every Monday. And I also want to encourage you, come over to Facebook, join the Actadad Facebook group. It is an awesome community and will really help you to take your parenting and fatherhood to the next level. It's a really great place to be. If you love the episode, or if you know someone that would love to be on the show, shoot an email over to connect@actdad.com. I'd love to chat. And with all that said, let's get right into the episode with Jeremy Roadruck. Run it. Jeremy, welcome to Actadad, the Awesome Dad Show. How are you?
I am amazing. Thank you, sir. It's really great to be here.
Glad to have you on. I've been listening to a few episodes of your podcast. It's really good. It's kind of taking parenting in a unique perspective, and I really like your openness on the show. It's really great. It's really great.
Well, I figured that way I have less stuff to remember if I just tell people what's actually going on.
That's fair. Honesty is the best policy, right?
I'm told.
So I want to start off here. One of the things that you are very passionate about, Jeremy, is martial arts. So I want to ask you, how important has martial arts been in developing you as a parent?
It's actually been life-changing and literally the most important thing.
Wow. Wow. And how so? How has it been so important? What's the one thing that you've learned from martial arts that's really resonated and manifested yourself in your parenting style?
It's not one thing. It's all the things, honestly. Okay. Because, so just take it from the very rip, okay? So when we bow, right hand, well, I'll do it for reverse, but right hand makes a fist, left hand make a palm. And that right there, the fist represents the tiger, it represents the physical world, it represents what you can see. The dragon, which is the palm, represents wisdom, it represents the invisible world, the things you feel, the things you can't see. And the two of those working together, for me, growing up, my dad read a book called Games People Play, and it was all about the dysfunction and the ways people manipulate to get energy. The problem with that book is it never said what to do to actually fix any of that stuff. It just said, here's the games, here's how to break the game. That's it. And so growing up, my dad using that tool, it actually broke our relationship. It broke rapport at times because he would identify the game, but having never read the book, because I'm, you know, 8-year-old kid, it just made it hard to have any conversation or any flow. So when I began studying martial arts, the games we play, the tiger, that's all about how we get energy. We either motivate it in positive ways or we manipulate it in negative ways. But we're all energy addicts. We literally need that or we're going to die. And so then the story, the dragon, that's the story. That's the justification for the game. The game is the behavior and the story is the justification. So when you begin to look at yourself as a parent, you look at your kids, you're going to see this constant interplay of behavior and justification, this tiger and dragon, the story and the game. Then you begin to start learning how to create win-win games. I feel good, you feel good, then we can work together and move forward together. And then we can create a more powerful story that's going to strengthen our identities. In martial arts, everybody talks about black belt excellence, right? What is black belt? In Jungian psychology, it's the hero archetype. Who is the hero? Who is the, to borrow Nietzsche, the Übermensch, right? Who is that superior person in your mind? And then project that outward. You're never going to be it versus, well, just be that person now. So you want to be a black belt, you'd have more focus. Great, work on your focus. Don't wait for the fabric to justify. Let's practice now on your focus and your paying attention and your discipline and your confidence. Let's build that stuff. And so that's why I say it's touched on all the things, because I'm a big fan of a bunch of stuff, and it really helped me to integrate a lot of that stuff together.
So that's fascinating. One of the things you mentioned was that your father had identified this problem, but wasn't able to identify the solution. So what I'm hearing you saying is that when you picked up martial arts, that was the solution to the problem that he had kind of shown you. There's this problem. What's a practical way that you were able to apply this game, the sense of game or this concept of game? What's a tactical way that you actually put this into practice with your parenting and with your kids? What's a game that you maybe set up to kind of show them these concepts?
Yeah. So for me, a game, really, there's four variables in our system: space, energy, time, and then the human body. The human body is the style of play, right? What's the best dessert? Everybody has a different answer. So what fulfills you as an individual, that's your unique style. So what fulfills my wife? What fulfills my son? What fulfills my daughter? It's all different. What fulfills me? And that's okay. That's the way they play the game. But the space, the energy, and the time, it all makes a box. The space is the boundaries. What is a go, no go, right? When somebody, we're tickling them, they say stop. We stop first time. We don't egg them on, do it two or three more times. They say stop, stop means stop. And we back out because we're teaching respect for boundaries. We're teaching consent. I mean, we're adding in some layers of you're the boss of your body. No one has a right to touch without your permission. Same thing we do in the Kung Fu school. Same thing we do in life. Energy is all about your rules. It's about, are we playing touch? Are we playing tackle? Are we playing tag? Mm-hmm. Right? Are we playing rugby? Because those are all different games and they have different sets of rules. So I have the boundaries, the space that we're in, but then I have the energy, the way that I show up in that moment. You know, some families, you say what you have to say, however loud you get, how loud you get. Other families, you don't raise your voice. Well, right. Our family, we say what we got to say. And if you need to go for a walk and cool yourself off, then you're allowed to leave. You get a 5 minute. You can put yourself in timeout, not other people, but put yourself in timeout, calm, cool, collected, then you can come back to the conversation. So we've got some rules around that. And then
I just want to point out, that's a really practical and important thing to do. Is it with a 3.5-year-old, temper tantrums happen. And I don't necessarily get angry or upset at my daughter, because that's part of a 3.5-year-old's existence, is handling challenges. I say, look, go in the corner, calm down. When you're ready to come back out, you just let me know and we'll go from there.
Right. Well, usually what we'll do is we'll give a time constraint. If they're 3 years old, they get 3 minutes to calm down, and then we'll go engage them and go, now, why are you over here? What happened? What could we do differently? I still love you. I think you're an amazing person. We just need to change what we're doing a little bit. Hmm. And that way, then we bring them. Then my wife taught me this. It's like how you bring them out of timeout, you re-socialize them. And what are we going to do different? Because we're now learning to help them separate their behavior from their identity. Because little kids don't do that. It's not, I did bad. It's, I am bad. So we've got to, I love you. I don't love what you're doing. And we literally use that language track because it helps the kids to separate. I'm lovable, just me. I'm worthy of love. Not if I do these things, then I'm worthy of love. No. We love you. That's not going anywhere. We're not happy with this. This needs to change.
So repeat that one more time for you. You said, I love you.
I love you. I just don't love the thing you're doing. I don't love what you're doing. I don't love what's happening. I don't love this exchange, whatever the dynamic is in that moment. So Evie goes to timeout. She lost dessert. She got in trouble. She did whatever. But then we give her the possibility she could earn some of her dessert back sometimes. Not all the time, because some days it's you effed up and you violated our family rules and there's consequences and you can try tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I love you. I don't love what's happening. We need you to be a better listener. Can you fix this?
Okay. I like that a lot. That's really practical. Thanks for sharing that. I like that.
Well, I think if you can do this for the rest of the night, I think you can earn back half of your dessert.
Yeah.
And that way.
Well, and so what I think is interesting about that is it's, that seems like a useful tool for instilling confidence in your kid and self-worth, because like you said, they might have a hard time separating their actions from their own identity. It brings me back to an interview I did with Jason Kreidman, who runs a YouTube channel called Dad University, where he doesn't tell his kids he's proud of them. He tells his kids, you should be proud of yourself. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of in line with that. It's a small tweak to your language that can potentially have a large impact on their mental health and their well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really about where their identity is, right? Mm-hmm. You're able to fix this. We almost always give her a way to recover, at least partially, because we want her to think about resourcefulness and how can she fix this. It's not a done deal. Nobody's dead. So nobody got broken. Okay, we can fix this. We could do something to change the situation. What could we do to help her? It's called laddering. We're giving her a way to climb out of that situation, and then she can begin to, and the same thing with her brother. How can they solve their problem versus I'm just going to give you pain. You're already upset with yourself for whatever happened and you went to timeout, but now I'm going to take stuff away from you. I'm going to stack pain on top of pain.
So how do you avoid the laddering concept from turning into negotiation? Because that's something that kids love to do. They're like, I ate half of my vegetables. Can I have dessert now? How do you avoid them getting confused or mixed up?
Oh, no, we're okay with negotiation. It's a skill you got to learn.
Okay.
However, there are certain baselines. I'm sorry. Dessert doesn't happen until all the vegetables are gone and, you know, whatever, whatever. This is the minimum condition you have to meet. You want YouTube? Great. You got to eat your breakfast all gone. Well, I eat half my breakfast. Can I have half YouTube? Nope.
I like that. So you're willing to negotiate on some things, but others, you're taking a hard line, a firm line. I think that makes sense.
Absolutely. And we're also giving the kids the ability to do that too. We want them to do something or we want something to happen or whatever, and they're not comfortable, they're not okay with, and they draw a hard line. We're like, okay, what's going on? I can respect that, but what's happening? And then we can help kind of deconstruct that they're not comfortable, they're overloaded, they're confused, they're scared, whatever they're, you know, we call it small, sad, cold, negative energy. You feel small, sad, or cold inside. Okay, let's fix that. Because our goal is to create a win-win. You feel good and I feel good, then we move forward together. And that's the time on the side is how do I score points, right? So space is the boundaries, energy is the rules, time is how I score points. How do I score points with you? What are your love languages? What's your need structure? What is your driving force in the moment? What is something we've been, you know, you want to do a slumber party, whatever. How do I score points with you so that we know how to light each other up? Because if we make it our mission, hey, let's light mom up today. Mom is going to do cool stuff, but she's going to do it from a place of abundance and being overflowing versus she's depleted and she'll do stuff, but she kvetches about it. Or I'm depleted and I'm doing stuff, but I'm kvetching about it. Whenever someone gives you that squeaky wheel, that's a sign they need to be, we need to fill them back up. We need to, you know, we need to put more love and aid into them because they're running low.
So what's an example of a time where your kid was feeling a little empty or cold on the inside, but you were able to give them a game that they could play, right? A theoretical game that allowed them to kind of climb out of that and become more self-confident. Do you have any good examples of that, Jeremy?
Yeah. So the boy was visiting. He's my stepson. Then he was visiting for the weekend and he got upset about something. It didn't go exactly the way he wanted. Transition day is never easy because, you know, we engage them differently than his dad does. And so he's upset. He's hiding under his blanket. He's on the couch, but he's got his feet sticking out. So we start to tickle his feet. Just a little bit teasing, just a little bit playing. And he's not saying stop. You know, he's pulling his feet away and trying to bury himself and all the rest, but he's not saying stop. So then we get him to start laughing and we just kind of shift his physiology and get him to relax. And then we're like, okay, well, we're going to go eat donuts in the other room. When you're ready to grace us with your presence, you may. And then we left. And then like a minute later, he comes in the room and he's in a better mood because we engaged him with some positive. We're not making him wrong. If he needs some time to recharge and we know, you know, transition day is not always easy and that's okay. So knowing that we can be a little more sensitive. Mom is usually faster at that than I am because, you know, still being dad and I got clear boundaries and dude, you're being a dill hole, stop it. You know, you're 10, knock this off. But emotionally, he's not really 10. I have to remind myself that he's a little bit younger emotionally than, and to be a little more gentle with him sometimes. But, you know, it's just that being willing to tickle, being willing to just shift the pattern, not argue about, not fight about, just change the conversation. Let's say I had a student last night who was melting down and she was just having, it was a sensitive day for her. And rather than make her wrong or isolate her, or you know, she's standing there 7 years old and she's in tears. So I got the class doing some stuff. I had somebody there that I could manage the class over and I just took her to the side. We had a little mat chat and I got her to sit and just put her hand on her heart, feel her heartbeat and just breathe for 2 minutes. And just doing that, it's a thing called heart meditation. You just put your hand on your heart, you feel your heartbeat, you breathe into your heart. Your EEG and your EKG begin to line up and then like you feel more calm and relaxed. The simple technique for centering, gave it to her.
Love that.
Yeah. I like to win.
Yeah. Winning is great. So we've touched on three of the sides of this box. What's the fourth side? We talked about space, energy, and time. What's
the bottom is the human body. So the top you can think of as the science of achievement. The bottom is the art of fulfillment. Okay. What makes you happy? What's your style? right? My son he's an auditory person. And when he was a little guy, same age as Evie is now, Evie's my daughter. But you could just say, I'm disappointed in you. And he would just fall apart. Like, it meant so much to him. Evie, you could say, I'm disappointed, and she doesn't care. She's visual kinesthetic. If you know, she was at daycare and I told them, you know, don't let her see how the gate works when she was two. I was like, don't let her see how the gate works. Cause it was like, you had to pull a thing and lift a thing and then do a thing. And then it opened. I come back like that night or the next day and she's letting kids out. And I was like, she saw what you guys did. Didn't she? And they were like, yeah. It's like, I told you, anything she sees, she will reproduce. She's really visual. She's smart. She sees and she can copy.
Yep.
You know,
yeah, so kids, I mean, that's what kids are. They, and I think we talked about this a little while ago, maybe it was on your show, but you got to be a role model because they're going to mimic everything that you do. It's really incredible how that transpires.
Yeah, it's crazy. They're always paying attention. There's a quote I have, I think it's from Robert Fulghum. Never be afraid your kids aren't listening. Be afraid they're always watching.
Wow. I like that a lot. And that was something that actually came up with my interview with Mike Garofalo last week was just that. Your kids will just say something out of the blue and you're like, well, where'd you hear that? And like, oh, maybe that's from me. So you gotta be careful. Like you said, they're always watching. That's really remarkable.
Well, when they're young, they especially when they're before they use language, they're modeling the dominant personality traits that they see in the environment because that's how energy flows. That's what they model. And a lot of times it's behavior that we're not happy with in ourselves. Then we go to suppress it and they go, wait, I got energy. I got attention. And then they do the behavior more. Mm. Right. When my daughter was two in my old Kung Fu school, we had, you know, pipe conduit that went up the walls for electricity. And she's 2 years old. She's 6 feet up in the air climbing the pipe. Okay, let's just go over here and let's just go do this thing. And then we blocked her access. And that's all we did. That was, there was no energy. Not, oh my God, what are you doing? Get down from there. You could have died. And we put all this energy and she's going, wait, I did what? And I got how much? And off she goes. Because
wow,
if we feed energy, they're energy addicts.
Wow.
So it was just, hey, nope, not a good idea. Moving on.
You know, I want to lean into this a little bit because this is so important. And it's one thing, I was at Disney World last week and the amount of times I heard parents yelling at their kids for whatever reason, it was just happening all around.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that? A parent yelling at their kid? Because this happens all the time. And look, I'm not perfect. I just want to put a disclaimer there.
Well,
I've raised my voice towards my child before. The way I handle it on the back end is I get down to her level and I say, look, I'm sorry. I should have lost my temper and
yep.
I still love you and this and that. But what do you think the impact is of that? Let's lean into that a little bit more.
Well, there's a couple things. First, full disclosure, I've yelled at my kids. I yelled at Evie so much one time she threw up. I mean, actually more than one time when she was a baby, because that was her defense mechanism, because she was tubed. She was in the hospital for 13 weeks when she showed up because she was 14 weeks early. And so she was extubated, and she extubated herself, but she was intubated. And so there's some damage in here, we think. So we have different ways that we learn and communicate. And when you use your words and they're not listening, the instinct is that I make it louder and bigger to get their attention. And sometimes that will work and sometimes that's appropriate. But what I've found is anything you do twice and it doesn't work, then you change. So if you say the kid's name and you say the kid's name again, maybe a little bit louder, both times, no reaction, then you go find what are they doing and you block their vision. Go, excuse me, eyes on me. Thank you. And then you carry on. Or like you said, you get down to their level, you change. Because a lot of times, especially with teenagers, we've trained them that we don't actually mean what we say until we're standing right over them yelling in their face. And then they go, oh, okay, you actually mean it. Because if you yell from the other room, yeah, that was a two. I got time. And then you come to the doorway and you say it, that's a five. I still got time. And then you're right here, oh, that's a nine. Now I got to take action. Now they actually mean it. So you're training each other.
How do you avoid that lack of relevance to what you're saying? How do you avoid that problem where, okay, it's only at a one or a two? Mm-hmm. How do you go straight to nine? Because if there's one thing, this is probably my biggest flaw, is I hate repeating myself. It drives me nuts. How do we make it so that we can say something once and that kid's like, and your child's like, okay, dad means what he's saying?
So the first thing you got to realize is that doesn't happen until like 13 to 15 years old.
Okay.
That they have the capacity to go, oh, he means it. Let me take action. That self-driving stuff. But really it's a pattern of your training and you're building over time. You're building that relationship and you're training to get to that result so that, hey, I need you to go do this. And then they're like, oh, okay. And then they take action. You got to build to that. And it comes down to make the request twice. no response, no action, no whatever, then you change what you're doing. You come up closer, be like, excuse me, tap, tap, tap. So I go touch them. That's kinesthetic. Break the line of sight. That's visual. I got to hit them from a different access system, a different communication system to break the fixation of whatever they got, right? So we talk about first step, basic, is self-control. My mind controls my body and my emotions. Focus is where I put my attention and involves focusing my eyes, my ears, my mind, and my body. So if somebody's not doing what you want, what are they focused on? You or something else. Break the fixation, get the focus back on you. Do they have the capacity to control themselves? They're in an emotional storm. They're not going to be able to control themselves. So then we got to get that centered and calm down first. Respect is when I show that I care, doing things and treating things with positive energy. I can't show respect if I'm not paying attention. I can't pay attention if I don't have self-control. So it's a stacking. Again, this is why martial arts touches on everything, because we begin with self-control, then focus, then respect. Self-discipline is when I do what I'm supposed to do. I tell me to do what I'm supposed to do, no matter if I like it or not. And the key word in there is supposed to, which means you care about the stuff that I want you to care about, teenagers. So I got to align with what you care about. You want the car this weekend. I'd love for that to happen. What needs to happen around here first? How does your room need to look before I feel comfortable giving you 2,000 pounds of death? And then the kids can go solve their problem. I'm not telling them to go clean their room. I'm just asking them. And then when they make the synaptic jump, because they said it, they own it, must be true. And so then they begin, so how can I engineer the conversation? So they're making the jumps. They're making the thing happen. So then I can work my way back and go, hey, if you want the blank, this needs to happen first. For the younger kids, you give them specific, do this to get that. And then as they get a little more sophisticated, you begin to back off. What needs to happen for you to get that?
Yeah, we have like a little star chart in our house. So when my daughter executes a task, she gets a star for the day. Yep. And then at the end of the week, depending on the amount of stars, she gets a reward.
Hold on for that just a second. Yep. Do you want to go for the bonus round? What's the bonus round? Well, if you turn your card in this week, you earn this. But if you could go 2 weeks, you could turn it in for that.
Oh, I like that.
Because then what you're starting to do is teaching delayed gratification. Wait, you want to go to Chuck E. Cheese? Fantastic. At the end of the month, if you could do 3 star charts with no other rewards, then we could do Chuck E. Cheese.
I like that. And delayed gratification is something I think that humans, especially in this day and age, really struggle with. We want it now. We need it now.
Just look it up. Hold on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And man, that's a real problem. I think that leads to a lot of dissatisfaction with people because you have this expectation that everything is right there at your fingertips, could be right here now. Yep. But when it's not, it's like, oh, the world is ending.
Yep. You got to let your kids learn how to be bored.
That is powerful right there. That's powerful. And that's a really hard thing to do because when your kids are bored, it causes trouble.
They're right on you. And they're like, you entertain me. Nope. I got work to do. I got this. I got that. You have this, this, and this. Solve your problem. Talk to you later. Bye.
For me, I think that's probably the biggest challenge that I have as a father, because there's sometimes where I just need to focus, like what we're doing now, handling a podcast or show.
Yep.
If I don't have the TV on, my kid is going to be, who knows what she's going to be doing.
Right.
Tearing apart the horse.
She's 3. She's 3. At 6, she could be more self-regulating. She can have a half hour of go play with your Legos. Our daughter, she got Legos for Christmas. Big box of pink ones. And then we went and bought more because she actually wakes up now and says, can we play Legos? Instead of, can I have YouTube?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's something I think my wife and I have been very good about, is not using the tablet as a crutch, which is something I think can get you into a lot of trouble if you're at a restaurant or going on a car trip, just handing them a tablet, because that'll keep them quiet. It'll put them into zombie mode.
Right. It's an opiate. I had a student who parents were massively introverted, and they would come home from work and school and they would be on their screens. And so he would be on his screen. So he had no socialization. So he had no impulse control. He's the only kid I've ever worked with who can't actually play a video game because he would get distracted by what all the people are doing, because he had such a low social engagement at home that he's constantly, he's 8 years old, but he talks like he's 3.
I was listening to an episode of your show, the Parenting Program Show, right? Your podcast, the Parenting Program Show. I was listening to an episode, and you had mentioned that at a phase in your life, you had a really hard time meeting friends, meeting other children when you were younger. Mm-hmm. How do you avoid your kids having that same problem? How do you allow your kids and teach them how to socialize with other children?
I married their mom.
That's fair.
She's a
so
social
you let your animal. Wife do the heavy lifting or?
Well, no, she's a social animal. So she loves to engage with people and to connect and to like people. I do too. But for me, it's more of a context thing. Like I don't have a need to go out and socialize because I interact with over 1,000 people a month through the martial arts school and the various things I'm doing online. So, I mean, I get a lot of engagement. So I don't have a huge need. I don't have a huge herd instinct. I don't have a huge, I've got to be part of a group and I've got to have a sports team and they need to be sportsing. And I mean, I'm interested in that stuff and I'm educated to some degree and I can ask intelligent questions, but I don't have that drive. And then there are a lot of people that do and there's nothing wrong with that. But like our daughter, you know, she was home with us a lot. And then we were like, okay, we can keep her home with us, but we need her to go to daycare. We need her to socialize with other children. She needs to learn how to take turns, you know, learn how to cooperate. I've had them both in the martial arts school because they're seeing me in a different role. And look, I'm not daddy. I'm Sifu. I'm in uniform. It's sir. It's Sifu 100%. And no, I can't hold on to you. I don't do that with any of the other students. That's inappropriate. So we got to help them understand time and place and how you show up in different times and different places, different roles that you have. Mm-hmm. And so we're giving them those different experiences and not everybody has that ability. So then it's getting them involved in sports teams, it's in getting them into sports. I would of course recommend everybody gets their kids into martial arts, especially when they're about like 7 to 8 through about 10 to 12, because no other activity is going to teach them conflict management and crisis management in the way that martial arts does. Kids in a sports team get in a fight, kick them off the team, put them in the penalty box, give them a timeout. They don't learn to resolve that stuff. In martial arts, you never hit out of anger, you never speak out of anger. So they're learning how to recognize their emotion and then choose their behavioral course, and they're learning to self-regulate. And then, you know, I had a five-year-old who had mom and dad, single child, and a look on his face when I said, hold on a second, you have to wait your turn. He's literally never heard those words in his whole entire life because he has two caregivers, one of which will acknowledge him and do something if he does something stupid.
Mm.
Right? So he's like, what? Like,
brain yeah, explodes.
You saw his eyes like just.
So did he have a meltdown right there and have like a tantrum, or was he just like, you know what, I'm going to respect that decision? Or
no, he was cool. We had good rapport. So I said, hold on a second, you got to wait your turn because it's them and then it's you again. He's like, what?
And I mean, that's invaluable.
And then I went over here and then I came back to him. I said, there you go. And then then it's him holding for her and her holding for him. And then we got to learn how to be a good partner. If you want to have good skill, you got to have a good partner. Best way to get a good partner is be a good partner, be the thing you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I recommend martial arts so, so much. And if you get it before 10 to 12, 10 to 12 is when the peer group starts to fracture and the peer group begins to take over from the role of the parents. We start to become kind of like a landing place and we transport. We become no longer the starring role. We are now support players. And 10 to 12, the peer group fractures. And we were cool in fourth grade. We're not in fifth grade. Your friends lost their freaking minds. They may or may not get it back. Don't worry about that. It's not about you. It's about them. I do some coaching around that with my students, fourth, fifth grade, 9, 10 years old, because you do see that. And kids take that personal. They don't like me anymore. Something's wrong with me. No, that's their deal. You're amazing. You keep driving forward. They're dealing with some stuff. And
the different phases of parenting. Your kids are going through different phases.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of parents, at least I do, I have this tendency of putting myself in my kid's shoes and saying, well, why don't they understand this? I understand this.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I've been working with families and kids for 25 years. So, and then I had another, from 9 years old, I had a bunch of stuff going on. I quit smoking at 9. So I had a bunch of stuff that I had to work through. Hmm. So it's being able to let your kids, again, you know, let them struggle, let them have that challenge because then they can recover themselves. Let them be bored. They can solve their own problems. Resourcefulness is the biggest gift you can give your kids, but don't like step back and let them drown. You know, yeah. Well, don't die, boy. You know, you gotta be there to help support. Be the wind a little bit, but let them begin to take more of a starring role, take more action, drive more, and then life gets easier for both of you over time.
Agreed. That came up with my interview with Stephen Bishop, actor Stephen Bishop, is exactly that. Like, you want to tell your kids, look, there's a pothole coming, but you also got to allow them to make their own mistakes and have their own failures.
Be aware. So, these are the things ahead of you. And then they have choices because you help them to be aware, and now it's their choices and their consequences, and then you help recover.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree 100%. You grew up in a military family, right? So there was a lot of traveling.
Yes, sir.
And we talk about making friends and having relationships with all these different people and trying to meet new people. What advice would you give to parents who are in a situation like that, where they're traveling a lot, they're putting kids in new schools, there's a constant like changing of the guard, if you would, because that's something that I think could be really challenging for a young child. Like, okay, I've just finally got adjusted. I've got some new friends. I'm feeling good about it. We're moving to Arkansas and I got to do it all over again. Right. Do you have any words of advice to help?
The biggest part really is about learning how to control the story. Are they losing something or are they gaining something? Right? I'm losing all my friends. I'm losing all my comfort. I'm losing all my certainty. Or I'm getting the opportunity to practice these skills and to make more friends, because in life, you're going to meet more people. Right? And the idea of what I call reason, season, lifetime. I got this from a friend of mine. God, her name escapes me. I can see her face right this second. I want to say it's Terry, but I don't know if it was Terry. But reason, season, lifetime. We do this when we talk about like teenage stuff and suicide. And I'll give you guys the drawing really quick. Reason, season, and lifetime. So you guys can see the drawing on my forearm. Kind of. Yeah, there you go. So the first one's a plus sign. There we go, plus sign. Plus sign is a reason. This thing and this thing impact each other, and then they go their separate ways. The season is two parentheticals. It comes together and then it separates, and the lifetime is equal sign, straight channels. So, you know, people look at the stories they tell, and this is one of the main platforms of the storytelling side, not the game side. But did that happen for a reason, a season, or a lifetime? Because if you take a painful moment, and I'm going to carry that with me forever because they licked the red off my candy when I was 2, so I burned the school down. Oh, I mean, that's somebody who's attaching to this pain point and they're making it become their lifetime story. Versus it was a season and I had bad friends when I was 2 years old. They licked the red off my candy, which is why I found better friends. And so when you're moving, it's a new season. It's a new period of time. And that way we don't get overly attached to stuff. So you can attach to good stuff, but then you can soften the negative stuff by doing that season, or turn into a lifetime. I'm sorry, turn into a moment, turn into a reason, say, well, when I was 2, somebody licked the red off my candy. I didn't like it, which is why I help other people to have more red on their candy.
So it's all about mindset. It's about shifting that mindset.
Absolutely. It's all about the story is the justification for the behavior. So the story that you tell, there's a great line I attribute it to Terry Pratchett. I don't know where it actually came from, but all stories are true and some of them actually happened. Because they're just a hypnosis, right? Our unconscious mind, our conscious mind is somewhere between 50 and 137 bytes of data a second. Our unconscious mind is 2 million to 11 million bytes of data a second, which means there's literally millions of stories you could choose to tell in any given moment of your life.
Wow.
Because we're constantly deleting, distorting, and generalizing. That's how the conscious mind maintains itself, is the unconscious deletes, distorts, and generalizes. And so because of that process, you could choose to see things in a new way. And you go, well, I had this experience. But what if you were a fly on the wall looking down on these two people? Right? When I do like negotiations in difficult conversations, you have person in position A, and then they jump to the other person's point of view in position B. And you argue your stuff. Then you jump to their side, argue their stuff. But then you come up to position C, you know, God's eye or the bird flying overhead. What do both people need to learn? And when you walk through those three steps, it literally shifts the way you relate to the information. And all of a sudden, flash of realization, and then problem solved. And so you can take these really, you know, really powerful conflicting points of view. And because you associated to this one, then you literally jump and associate to this one. Then you step on top of a chair and look down. You change the references to it. You change the way your brain relates to it. You change the neural processes. You begin to new resources, new resourcefulness, and you find solutions you never could see from either of these positions. Because both of these people are right, but they're both missing something. And when you get to that higher vantage and see the connection, you go, oh, they're both trying to get to this result from these two things. And you can integrate that. And you go up a level of thinking and connect it and go, oh, I got it. And then problem is resolved.
That's fascinating. It's really fascinating. Changing your mindset, shifting the perspective. I like that a lot. I'm sure you can go on for a very long time on that concept. And if you guys want more of it, you got to check out his book. You got to check out the podcast. That's where you got to go. So before we get into the rapid fire portion of the show, Jeremy, why don't you just tell everyone where they can find out more about Jeremy and what you're doing.
Okay, well, I am the only Jeremy Roadruck, R-O-A-D-R-U-C-K. I am the only Jeremy Roadruck in the world. Thank God. But so you guys search me online. I'm the only me. There's only about like 200 or 300 Roadrucks on the planet anyway. So Kung Fu Guy Jeremy is the other moniker I go by. So I'm on Instagram, Kung Fu Guy Jeremy, YouTube. I'm on Twitter. All those are Kung Fu Guy Jeremy. I am on Facebook, Jeremy R. The Kung Fu Guy, and then just Jeremy Roadruck. I have a professional and a personal. Much more active on the personal. I'm on TikTok. I have a podcast. You can find that like everywhere you get podcasts. It's also on my YouTube channel, the video version. And then I'm on Amazon because I got a couple of books out there. I also have the book available for free. I also do like coaching and mentoring for families and couples. Yeah. So there's all the places, all the things.
Good stuff. Great, Jeremy. So let's get into the rapid fire here before I let you go. Jeremy, what's your favorite book or story to tell your kids?
Ooh, well, favorite book I haven't read yet to them, but it's Seventh World of Chan, which is an intermediate level of Buddhism. And it goes through like the history of Zen Buddhism through the different patriarchs. Then there's part two is amazing and everyone should read it because it gets into archetype projection integration. Love that. But at bedtime story time, we do In the Great Green Room, which I have memorized.
Excellent. I'm not familiar with it. I'm going to check that one out.
In the Great Green Room, there was a red balloon, a telephone, and a cow jumping over the moon, and three little bears sitting on chairs, and two little kittens and a pair of mittens, that whole thing. I've been reading to my daughter since she was born. It's part of our ritual for helping her go to bed at night, and it's still just part of the thing. She's five, and we still do it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Favorite city to visit, Jeremy?
Ooh, favorite city to visit. Gosh. Been a lot of places. Probably Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah, so far I would say Chicago. I love going to Primitive, which is they sell museum quality stuff. They have like you walk in the place and around the corner there's a 20-foot tall, it's the root of some tree from Africa. It's 20 feet tall and like 6 feet wide, and it's just like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. It's $20,000, so I'm not really gonna buy that because I don't have a wall big enough for it. And if I have the 20 grand, I'm not gonna put it into a piece of wood. I'm gonna put it into other places. But it's beautiful. And they actually have, I don't know if they still have it, but they have a Buddhist temple, like parts of a Buddhist temple before it was drowned in the Three Gorges Dam project in China. They have that available. It's like $350,000. But it's like the actual stones, the walls, the paintings. But you can go in there and you can just kind of sit, and they have meditative music playing. And it's just like, it's probably my favorite place on the planet, honestly. That and cool. Then Helen here in Ohio.
Chi-town, very cool.
Yeah.
Pineapple on pizza, yay or nay?
Oh, yeah. I like all kinds of weird, crazy crap. So, yeah, pineapple on pizza, I would do it.
Word. If you could talk to anyone in history, who would you talk to?
Ooh, probably Zhuangzi, which is an ancient Taoist philosopher. But I got to understand ancient Chinese, too. That's the caveat.
Yeah, we'll give that to you. I'll give you ancient Chinese. You got that.
Okay.
Final question here for you, Jeremy. You have a billboard that can reach millions and millions of people. What are you going to put on that billboard?
If you want a happy life, if you want a more fulfilling life, trade expectation for appreciation.
You hit the nail on the head, brother.
It changes literally everything. When you no longer, I don't expect her to do the dishes. She does dishes, I appreciate it. She doesn't expect me to do the dishes. I do it, she appreciates it.
Yeah.
It changes literally everything. Like, hey, thanks. That was really helpful. I appreciate that. Just saying that. It's just, I got points.
Trade your expectation for
appreciation,
gratitude and appreciation.
Yeah,
love that.
Yeah, my favorite.
Thanks for being on the show, Jeremy. I really appreciate your insight, man. We got into some deep stuff. I love it. And I just want to commend you on what you're doing for parents and families all over the world. Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you. Yeah, this has been great. I love these kind of conversations, and I want to travel the world, get paid to eat and do these kinds of things on stage. Light the world up one family at a time is really the key.
Love it.
We all want the same stuff. Happy, healthy, safe, wealthy, wise.
Respect. We'll talk soon, Jeremy. Thank you so much for listening to the episode today. Your support means so much to me, and it's just an honor to be here and speak with you and help the world become a better place for fathers and families. Jeremy brought a lot of really, really tactical and great information to the table, whether it was how to correctly implement a timeout, how to incentivize your kids with star charts, the value of martial arts. And of course, I love his billboard message of exchanging your expectations for gratitude. If you haven't already, hit the subscribe button. There will be a fresh episode every Monday. You can also watch a lot of the interviews on the ActDad YouTube channel. And if you're really loving what we're doing here at ActDad, you absolutely have to go to patreon.com/ActDad. There is a great community developing. There's exclusive content. And I cannot tell you how much your support means to me. So go over to patreon.com/ActDad and find a tier that works for you. Even if it's just $1, it means a lot. So head on over and check that out. In the meantime, have an awesome week. Execute on what we talked about here today. And I will catch you here next Monday, same place, same time. Peace.